Hi guys, why not head to my official online store now, shop.asmia1.com, to check out the official AB1 leisurewear line. You can also find some sales goalkeeper products on our website. Use code SOS for a 10% discount of all products. Also, make sure you follow our social media pages for regular offers and to keep up with the latest products. Thank you guys for your support. Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of The Season of Sports with me, Ezra Begovic. Riding solo for this one, all you Rachel Humphries fans will be disappointed that my producer isn't joining me on this episode, but I'm sure that she will be back soon. I'm very excited about the episode ahead. We're going to be talking baseball with Dan Zimborski from ESPN. I'm a huge baseball fan, so can't wait to talk to him about the upcoming season. We'll also have the huddle to finish off the episode where we answer your questions that you've sent in to us throughout the last few days, so really looking forward to that. But before we get into everything, I want to get across a few of my thoughts from recent events in sports. I think one thing we have to touch on is LeBron James. Obviously, you guys know I'm a huge LeBron James fan. His achievement, his latest achievement, where he's reached 30,000 points, 8,000 rebounds, 8,000 assists. So for me, you know, that's incredible. I've always said that he's the greatest basketball player of all time. And, you know, those kind of statistics back that up. So I think that was huge. Also in the golfing world, Tiger Woods has been back. He's played a couple of events recently. Obviously finished higher up in the leaderboard at the Honda Classic, which was awesome to see him back in contention at the tournament and playing well. I think we all know as golfing fans that if he's involved in any tournaments, it makes it that much more exciting and fun to watch. So hopefully he can stay healthy and keep producing the goods. Phil Mickelson won the World Golf Championships in Mexico in a playoff against Justin Thomas, which was awesome to watch too. Good to see the big lefty back on form and in the winning circle. That was awesome. Phil Neville started his reign as women's national team head coach with a tournament in America, beating France and drawing with Germany. So it's been a good start for him. I know he's got big ambitions for that program with the World Cup next year and maybe even winning it. So I wish him all the best. I think it's been a great appointment for the FA, and you know, I think he'll do great. He's got a really good bunch of players on his disposal, and you know, I'm sure he'll make the most of it. And another thing I wanted to touch on was my charity golf day. It's our annual event. It's on the 14th of May this year at Burr Hill Golf Club in Surrey. It's the Ezra Begovic Foundation Golf Classic. Make sure you head to our website, ezrabegovicfoundation.com, to get all the latest information on tickets, to send any inquiries about tickets in, and we hope to have many of you golfers out there joining us on the day. We've got a great field. We had a great field last year with the likes of John Terry, Kevin Peterson, and it's looking to be a star-studded event this year with the likes of Matt Dawson and Jamie Redknapp. So very much looking forward to the day. It was a lot of fun, and should be a lot of fun again this year where we raise funds for my charity, and that will obviously go to very, very good use. So now we're going to get into some baseball talk with Dan Zimborski from ESPN. With baseball season just around the corner, and opening day only a few days away from us, I'm delighted to be talking some baseball with a good friend of mine, Dan Zimborski from ESPN. Dan, how are you, man?
Pretty good. How you doing, Asmir?
Yeah, doing great. Thanks for joining us here in the Season of Sports. I'm super excited. This is one of my favorite times of the year. Spring training is alive. Baseball season's around the corner. So really excited to talk some baseball with you. And the first thing I kind of wanted to get into, I wanted to recap the offseason a little bit. So much happens in the offseason in baseball over the winter. What are some of your storylines from the last 3 or 4 months?
Well, probably the biggest storyline this offseason is how slow free agency was this winter. You look at baseball's free agent mark, I mean, there were 180 free agents, and half of them still remain unsigned. And some of the top free agents only signed a few weeks ago in Eric Hosmer and J.D. Martinez, and there's still actually some good free agents out there. And we don't usually see this in baseball. Usually, the top free agents are all signed by the end of January, open spring training with the new teams, but we're not seeing that this year.
Yeah, I think it's crazy. I mean, at the time of recording this, you know, the likes of Jake Arrieta are still out there on the open market, Lance Lynn, Alex Cobb. What do you attribute the lack of pace in the free agents market this year?
Well, there are a number of theories, and it's always hard to pin down what the exact right answer is. Some people suspect a bit of collusion, and given baseball's history, collusion between the owners has been something that has happened multiple times, which has led to, you know, big damages sent to players. At this point, I'm not really sure that's the thing. It's just that with analytics so advanced in baseball, there's such a unanimity of just how to evaluate players in baseball. If you take a player and ask 30 teams about how good they are, if you talk about Jake Arrieta to all 30 teams, you're going to get a fairly uniform evaluation from the teams. And that's not something you used to see 20, 30 years ago, because you had teams that were more statistical. You had teams that based more on scouting and some that just went by conventional wisdom and their gut feelings. So when you have so much agreement, you can see how bidding wars don't necessarily start to happen like they used to.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the likes of the super agent Scott Boras must be tearing his hair out and seeing what's happening to some of his big clients. But I also think that the overspending of the last few years has taught some teams a lot. So they want to get real value for money. But, you know, I see some of these guys landing. Where would you see Jake Arrieta landing? Do you see any potential landing spots for the likes of him, Lance Lynn, Alex Cobbs?
I'd love to see Jake Arrieta end up with the Los Angeles Angels. There's actually hasn't been a lot of buzz about where he's going, but I think he's the best fit for the Angels, who've had so many problems with injuries in the rotation, and they upgraded their infield defense so much that a sinker ball pitcher like Jake Arrieta would be a pretty solid addition to the team, I think. Alex Cobb, I can see him going to a contender as number 3-4 guy. I'm surprised the Orioles weren't more aggressive at going after him. You can see a team that's looking to step up, maybe the Phillies or even the Braves, start to think, hey, if we get a good enough deal on Cobb, and in this free agent market, we're seeing a lot of good deals now, maybe you bring in Cobb for 3 years and with an eye to compete with him in 2019 and 2020. So there are a lot of possibilities remaining, but I think that some of these players are going to end up getting less than even that they expect now, simply because teams are establishing their rosters and they don't really want to shake up rotations in the last week of March. So it's interesting to see the time crunch here. And as I said, it's something we haven't really seen before to this extent.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it'll be interesting. But, you know, I do like your point about a couple of teams maybe getting some good value for money here and, you know, getting these guys to anchor their rotation. So we'll see what happens. But on the flip side, there has been a little bit of noise in the offseason and a couple of splashes, and none probably bigger than the splash my Yankees made. And I know you're an O's fan, Orioles fan, so I am.
Yeah, so it's
no
it's
hard
tough.
Feelings, buddy.
it was tough, but it was a terrific addition to the Yankees. You look at Stanton and Judge in that lineup. I mean, they could easily hit 100 home runs between them, which is just a frightening number. And arguably, the Yankees have the best farm system in baseball, too. And that makes them especially scary, because some of the old Yankees teams that dominated, once the Jeters and Bernie Williams graduated to the majors, the minor leagues weren't as stocked. But the Yankees looked to be, you know, a mid-90s win team with the best farm system in baseball, the most money in baseball. So it's frightening for any AL East team right now.
Well, absolutely, yeah. I mean, the addition of Giancarlo Stanton is, you know, probably not something that most Yankees fans would have thought would happen, but now it's happened, obviously makes us super excited for the season. So I think that was obviously a huge addition. J.D. Martinez going to the Boston Red Sox. Like you said, Eric Hosmer going to the San Diego Padres. Shohei Ohtani being added. I think he's going to be an intriguing player for all of us, for baseball fans, to see how he fits in with the LA Angels and what they do with him, with the pitching and the hitting side of things, and how much he DHs. What are your thoughts on Shohei Ohtani and how he could, you know, make an impact in the game?
He's a fascinating player, simply because there aren't really many, if you go through history, not a lot of true two-way players in baseball. I mean, of course, you have Babe Ruth, but we're talking 100 years ago now. And even he stopped pitching when he was in the outfield full-time. So it was exciting to see kind of that race for Ohtani, because most teams were highly interested. Only a few teams kind of stayed out of the bidding, like the Orioles did, to my eternal chagrin. I think that it's going to be a good test for Mike Socha of the Angels on how creative he can use Ohtani. Because not only is he a two-way player, I mean, he's also a rookie to the major leagues. He had an injury last year. They're going to need some imagination to get him as many innings as they can reasonably get out of his arm this year and still give him an opportunity to get as many at-bats as possible. And that might be tricky, because his playing time comes at the expense of Albert Pujols, who, of course, still has years remaining on that contract. But as the Angels realistically want to compete, they do have to kind of shut down his playing time. So it could be a delicate situation. It's probably one where they're happy to have a veteran manager.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Mike Socha is the person you want at the helm of a situation like this. But like I said, there isn't been much history with players like this on how to deal with them. So I'm going to be very intrigued as to how he deals with this. And for you, have you been to spring training much? What are your thoughts on spring training? Any interesting storylines from spring training over there at the moment?
Well, really, the talk about free agency still dominates the spring. That issue isn't going away. And then, of course, the new talk about the baseballs and the humidor, that they're going to keep all the balls in climate-controlled facilities this year. So that's what they've been talking about generally around baseball. I'm going down in, 11 days. The point at which I go down to spring training usually depends on how bad the weather is. And actually, the weather's been pretty mild, so I haven't been pushed down there. When the winter's really bad where I am, sometimes that'll get me down there, really, really early, right as it opens.
No, it's exciting. It's a nice place to be. Dan Zimborski joining me here on the Season of Sports, ESPN analyst. Make sure you guys follow him on Twitter, at DZimborski. Dan, let's break down the leagues. I want to start with the American League, obviously. I want to actually start with talking about our two teams and how they shape up. I know that you've a lot of different disgruntled Orioles fans out there. What are your thoughts on the Orioles and Peter Angelos, the owner, and his actions with the team and where the team's going? What are the kind of expectations for you guys heading into the season?
Well, expectations among Orioles fans and myself are pretty low. The team has significant problems with the starting pitching, and they didn't really address them in any real significant way like they needed to. And they need to compete this year because Manny Machado is a free agent after 2018, and all indications are that the Orioles are not going to be able to re-sign him to a long-term deal. And with the core of the team without Machado, it's really hard to see just a path towards contending for this organization. The farm system's still one of the weaker ones in the majors, and they're not really going to spend more money than they are now. So generally, all the signs for the Orioles are pointing in the down direction. I'm not very positive about the long-term future of the team. They've had some troubling things in their development. Peter Angelos, for instance, they have a team philosophy against signing international free agents, and every other team signs international free agents. So the Orioles, they're already going to be behind most of the rest of the division in money. They're also behind in international prospects, and you can't really start with that many self-induced handicaps. So it's the Orioles could cobble together just, an 85-86 win season, become close enough to the playoffs to become just relevant for a while, but either way, the abyss beckons.
So what do you suggest for the Orioles with Manny Machado obviously heading into free agency next winter? Do you suggest a rebuild, maybe trading of Machado, the likes of Adam Jones, Chris Davis? What would you suggest to maybe, like you said, build up that farm system and go into one direction instead of being just in the middle, not achieving anything?
Yeah, the middle is just a pretty terrible place to be in baseball because you have teams putting together strong rebuilds for future wins. You have teams going all in now, and the Orioles are just kind of floating around in the middle, and that's not a good place to be. I do think at this point, without the ability to address the pitching in any meaningful way, that you do need to start a full rebuild. You look at what teams like the Cubs and Astros did. They were teams that were in similar situations to the Orioles. They were older teams. They didn't have great farm systems at the time they started to rebuild. And they remade those organizations into elite franchises. There's nothing Houston did. There's nothing Cleveland did that Baltimore can't do. The question is, will they do it and can they commit to it? Because the Orioles were in a similar situation in the late 90s. And it took 15 years between winning seasons because they just tread water. And that's what this organization does the best. So just speaking as a fan, I'd like to see them move on from that.
Yeah, it's quite funny. One of the storylines of well, in recent times in baseball has been the tanking side of things. And I hate that word tanking. I really, this, you know, it bothers me. I do believe that any executive, most franchises do want to win. And I just call it a big rebuild. You know, and unfortunately, a lot of teams with certain revenues, they can't compete all the time. So like you said, they get to a stage where they literally have to sell off assets, rebuild and reboot again for the future and try and be as competitive as soon as possible. And I like what certain teams are doing. If obviously the intention is to win, maybe I'm giving teams and executives the benefit of the doubt. But I hate the word tanking, and I don't think it's as big of an issue as teams are, and if people in the game making it out to be. I don't know what your thoughts are on the whole tanking side of things.
Oh, I fully agree with that. There have always been bad teams in baseball at any time. But when a team is a poor team in a certain season because they're planning for the future, I mean, that's a good thing. People, when the Astros and Cubs were starting their rebuild, people said, oh, they're just trying to lose games. They're going to keep the payroll low forever and be content to, you know, lose 100 games for eternity as long as they turn a profit. Well, the Astros and Cubs are the last two World Series winning teams. I think that planning for the future, and sometimes that requires sacrificing the present. When you save money for retirement, that is sacrificing some money you could be spending in the present for the future. And I don't think anyone would say, hey, I'm saving up for my retirement and call it that I'm tanking my finances. It's the opposite. Not every team can have $150, $200 million payroll every single season and push forward. So teams that aren't going to do that, like you look at the Pirates, you look at the Padres, they have to be smart about it. And as long as when the time comes, they're willing to invest in their teams, there's no problem with a rebuilding phase.
Absolutely. And everyone, you know, like the White Sox did it last year. They sold off every single asset. They got so many prospects back. And now this year, oh, everyone loves the future of the White Sox. But now, you know, everyone's hammering the Miami Marlins and Derek Jeter for rebuilding. It's not, it's just have to, there's a strategy for success, and that's the way they want to go about it, and that's their right. So that's my little rant over for the day, but I've never been a huge fan of the word tanking and the way people perceive that strategy. So go from there. But now I want to move on to the Yankees for the season ahead. Obviously, a first-year manager, Aaron Boone, coming in for Joe Girardi, the huge addition of Giancarlo Stanton, of course, Brandon Drury, who's a utility infielder. The one thing that fascinates me is what Aaron Boone's going to do with that lineup, because I think as we all know, Brett Gardner is gonna lead off, and then what do you do with the three, you know, big guys with Stanton, Judge, and Sanchez, and obviously Greg Bird being in the middle of that, being a lefty. I think obviously you hit one of the big boys second, Greg Bird third, and then fourth and fifth would be, Stanton and Sanchez. How do you see that folding out?
I expect Judge, Stanton to go two and three in the lineup. There's a general thought in baseball in recent years to put a better hitter at number two than you might do 30 years ago. And of course, putting Greg Bird in cleanup, that kind of splits up the righties so that you don't have three righties in a row and then Bird and say Didi Gregorius. Because as long as teams are going to have, 13 man staffs, they're going to have those situation relievers, and you don't necessarily want to play in those hands. Especially, the lineup doesn't make a big difference as long as it's a practical lineup. So the idea is let's not have an exploitable weakness. So I see Judge and Stanton going two and three. Judge has the better on-base percentage than Stanton, most likely. So I think that's probably how they'll go. It's a pretty analytical organization now. One of the reasons Boone was brought in is because he can work together well with Brian Cashman on that front. The team wasn't unhappy with Joe Girardi as a manager. It's just that they wanted a kind of relationship where Cashman and their manager saw things the same. And that has a lot of value. You look in Chicago that Theo Epstein and Joe Maddon are kind of on the same level with things and kind of see things, have the same kind of personalities, and work harmoniously together. So I think Boone's going to do a good job. I mean, the expectations is always the challenge for a first-year manager, especially a team that is expected to win games. But I think he'll do a good job.
Yeah, absolutely. You want that unity between manager and front office. That'll only breed success. Only other question, the Yankees. I know the outfield's pretty much set with Gardner, Hicks, and Judge. I think Stanton will play a little bit of right field, another experiment, a little bit of left field, but he'll DH, and then Jacoby Ellsbury will be your fifth outfielder. So they've got some good depth there. Who do you think will start the season I'm at second and third base.
I know Miguel Andujar has kind of made a play for a starting position, but I think that they're going to look at the service time of the players, and I think you're going to start the season with Brandon Drury at third base, Tyler Wade at second base. But these are just short-term things. You'll see Andujar soon. You'll see Torres soon, because they are the future of the team, and the Yankees do want them up as soon as it's possible. But it's nice to get that extra year of service time.
Yeah, absolutely. There's no need to rush these guys and expect too much from them too soon. Looking at the rest of the American League, it's looking very, very strong. Obviously, you have the defending World Series champions in the Houston Astros and the AL West. The LA Angels have obviously improved. Seattle Mariners are no pushover either. So I think that's a very tough division. I really fancy the Cleveland Indians in the Central, although the Minnesota Twins are also much improved, and they were a wildcard team last year. So I think the American League is very, very competitive. How do you see the American League playing out as the season goes on?
I think the biggest change is that the Angels are a better team than last year. They didn't do everything they needed to do, I don't think, but they did enough that they've moved up kind of into the first tier of wildcard contenders. A lot of the things I kind of see going is similar to last year, because, I mean, the Tigers are going to remain at the bottom of the league. The White Sox aren't going to win yet. The Royals are starting their rebuild, so they're probably going to win 70 games. And some of the other teams in the West, they didn't do as much as they needed to keep up. The Mariners have always been competitive, but they didn't really address their starting pitching, similar to the Orioles. And the Rangers, of course, they lost Yu Darvish coming into, well, they lost him last year when they traded him, but they never really replaced that. And remember, they were a sub-500 team with Darvish for two-thirds of the season. And there's not a lot of players who are likely to change that for the team in the short term. So I think that right now, the AL, it's probably fairly static. The rebuilding teams are kind of earlier in the process than some of the NL teams are. So I think that we might have a repeat of the AL playoff teams from last year.
Moving on to the National League, one of the big storylines, obviously, is the change of manager for the Nationals heading into potentially last year with Bryce Harper, who's also set to be a free agent next winter. Dave Martinez comes over from the Cubs. I've heard a lot about the Nationals, how the mood is better. Obviously, Dave Martinez has brought in a better atmosphere and culture into the team. Is that something you've heard? How do you see the Nationals? Do you see them as the main favorite for the National League?
I still think the Dodgers are a better team, but one thing the Nationals have is they had the clearest shot to the divisional title than the other two, than anyone in the other two divisions. Because the Cubs, I mean, the Cubs are still the favorite, but there's legitimate competition. The Dodgers are still the favorite, but you still have the Diamondbacks and you still have the Rockies, and the Giants are much improved. But the Nationals, the Marlins are going to not be good this year. The Mets still have questions about their starting pitching health. And I love Atlanta and Philadelphia in the future, and I think we're going to start to see them kind of transition into more of a win-now mode as in Atlanta, their just huge prospect haul starts to reach the majors. And in Philadelphia, when they start opening up their wallets, because they signed a $5 billion deal with Comcast a couple years ago that they haven't yet put on the field. So they can spend a lot of money. But I think the Nationals are a pretty clear NL East favorite at this point. They're probably going to win the division by 10, 15 games. And that's not as many as 20 last year, but I'm very comfortable with the Nats at the top of the division.
Yeah, I mean, they look good. They look stacked for the year ahead, especially, like you said, with the division. One of the sleeper teams, actually, for me, as much as you can call them a sleeper, is actually the Milwaukee Brewers. You know, I'm surprised they haven't quite gone from one of the pitchers on the market out there to really shore up that rotation. The likes of Lance Lynn, Alex Cobb, you know, I think they would fit right into the system and it wouldn't be too expensive either. I think that would really put them on a good platform where they can challenge the Cubs and make a serious push for the playoffs. How do you see the Brewers?
Oh, the Brewers are a fun team. I mean, they were one of the best stories of 2017, and they really made some significant additions this year. They added Christian Yelich to the outfield. They added Lorenzo Cain, and that's a pretty big deal. Now they actually have a surplus of outfielders. If they don't sign one of the remaining free agent pitchers, I could see them trading Domingo Santana for a pitcher because they actually now have this pleasant problem of having too many outfielders. So you could see Santana. You could see Keon Broxton be traded for a starting pitcher. So, I mean, what they have is a lot of options, and that's a good thing to have. I do agree with you, they could use an extra pitcher, especially when they could eat some innings for them.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I do like the look of them, you know, and seeing how they can challenge. Now, moving on to the West, it'll be interesting. I think the most interesting team for me this year are the San Francisco Giants, because obviously they've added Evan Longoria, Andrew McCutchen to their team. They're a bit of an aging team. They have their legends in Madison Bumgarner and obviously Buster Posey, who are going to get traded. But at the same time, they have one of the poorest farm systems in the MLB. I think if they don't get off to a good start, could you see wholesale changes to the San Francisco Giants?
I think if they have a very poor start, then it could start to get ugly in San Francisco. But to their credit, they know what they need to do with their team. They need to win now. It's not a team where they can wait 3 or 4 years to build towards it at this time. And they really put their best effort into it this offseason. I mean, you brought in McCutchen and you bring in Evan Longoria, and they certainly tried to bring in some of these other guys. I mean, they were one of the finalists for Giancarlo Stanton, but of course Stanton declined the trade, so they kind of fell short there. The Giants are one of the finalists for Ohtani. They fell short there. And they were also interested in both Christian Yelich and Marcell Ozuna, and they fell short there. So that had to sting a bit, because that would make the team even better. I think they're a legitimate wild card contender now, which is pretty impressive, because they lost 98 games last year. So that's a pretty good turnaround. But I think this season, maybe next season, are probably their last good chances. So you could definitely see why they're just, you know, rolling the dice and going just all in here.
Yeah, we'll see what goes on there. So I'm going to put you on the spot. We always ask for prediction here in the season of sports. I know it's early. A lot of things can happen, injuries and whatnot. Who is your World Series pick?
I'm going to say the Dodgers. We already had the Cubs and Astros with their World Series trophies, but I think that the Dodgers have been strong enough and they've gotten to the playoffs regularly enough, and hopefully Clayton Kershaw's back won't be sore this season. I'm going to say this will be finally the Dodgers' year.
And who do you see them beating from the American League coming in to the World Series?
I'm going to say a Houston rematch, and this time they come out ahead.
I like it. I'm going to disagree with you. I'm going to go for Yankees to win the World Series, much to your surprise.
Yeah, that could easily happen. There are a lot of great teams in baseball right now.
Yeah, no, exactly. I think what's exciting about this season is actually pretty wide open. I'm going to go Yankees-Dodgers in the World Series, and Yankees to come out on top. So I think they'll add, as the season goes on, they'll add a bit to the pitching. They've got a lot of payroll flexibility, so I think they'll get stronger as the season goes on. But listen, Dan, I really, really appreciate you coming on here. Looking forward to the baseball season. It's been a blast to talk to you, and we hope to speak to you again very, very soon.
Thanks for having me, and we'll see who was right next time.
Appreciate it. Thanks, man. So guys, now it's time for the huddle. This is the part of the show where we answer all the questions that you guys have sent in to us over the last few days. I really appreciate you guys getting in touch with us. Make sure you keep following us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. We appreciate your support and obviously all your questions. So we're going to start from the first one from Billy Mack on Twitter. He asks, who do you think is the best heavyweight boxer in the world as of right now? That's a great question, Billy. My choice at the moment, obviously, would be Anthony Joshua. I think he's the best there is at the moment. You know, he'll have some bigger tests coming up in the next couple of years. We'll see how he copes with them. But obviously, you'd have to say that he's the best heavyweight at the moment. Obviously, one of my favorite boxers to watch. And, you know, I'm sure he's got a huge future ahead in boxing, and we'll win many, many more matches. Moving on to the next one, we've got a question from Alf on Twitter. He asks, what is your favorite game of your career? The favorite game of my career would be our opening game at the World Cup 2014 in Brazil against Argentina, to play the opening game at the Maracanã. Our first ever game in a major tournament to play against Argentina, Lionel Messi. Was a fantastic experience. And that actually leads me into the second question, when he asks, what are you most proud of in your career? And I think that experience in Brazil, that first game, everything that came with it, goes hand in hand with the first question, because, you know, that was a team I was really proud of, all those guys that that really fought for one cause, and we came together, had a fantastic atmosphere in the squad, and achieved some great things. So I would say, again, that experience in Brazil was the most proud moment of my career. Best player you've played with? You know, that's also a tough question, because I've been very fortunate over my career to play with many good players and a lot of good qualities. But I think the one that sticks out would be Eden Hazard at Chelsea. Don't think I've ever seen a player with such natural ability as him, and what he can produce in any given moment, and how crucial he can be to a team. So I would say Eden Hazard. I think that's something that, for me, was a highlight of one of my careers, to play with a player like him. And, you know, it was a pleasure, and I definitely think he was the best player I played with. So moving on to the next question on Instagram, actually. We have Sean underscore 1982. Hi, Asmir. What sporting events are on your bucket list? Well, that, there's a few. There's so many things that I love to watch, probably that I can only do after my playing career. I'd love to go to a Super Bowl. I'd love to be there live. I'd love to go to Augusta and watch the Masters. That's a huge tick on my bucket list. So, yeah, looking forward to attending those in the future, and hopefully I'll have a great time. But, guys, that brings us to the end of the huddle. Really, really appreciate all your questions. Like I said, keep getting in touch with us on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram, and we'll get as many of your questions answered as possible. So it's going to be great. And that brings us to the end of the show. Had a blast. That was a fantastic episode. I love talking baseball with my man Dan Zimborski from ESPN. He was awesome. And yeah, we'll see you guys in a couple of weeks. But don't forget to listen to us on Audio Boom, Spotify, iTunes, wherever you get your podcast from. Leave us a review or like. We love hearing from you guys and seeing what you think of the podcast. So really appreciate it. And I'll see you guys in a couple of weeks.